What does the gig economy mean for you? Is picking and choosing how you spend your working hours more of a must or more of a luxury? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton focuses on gigging, flexible work, but work without much of a net. The Gig Chat starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening, because this week we are gigging it. All four segments slash podcasts are taking a different angle on the gig economy. We have gigging for professionals like consultants through drivers for Lyft. We have tax tips for giggers, you know, if the tax reform goes through. And then there's the personal economics of gigging. And via a new Google tool, a way to look for permanent jobs while you continue to gig. Now, right now, it's testimonials. We spoke with two people who have gigged, are gigging, and will continue to gig. First up, we have Arthur. Arthur at first took gigs for walking around money. And then I'll let him tell you.
My name is Arthur from Union City. I worked for one, which was a good experience, which was TaskRabbit. The other, which was not so good, was a delivery-based service around San Francisco. That one wasn't particularly good because a lot of people would request some of the strangest things that are not conducive to being delivered, like ice cream cones. People would order ice cream cones from places and then expect you to bring it all the way across town in San Francisco and then get upset when it's melted all over the place when you bring it to them. Adult products and things like that. It was a little strange. I got a number of parking tickets trying to do quick drop-off. So in the end, it was like I'm losing money on some of the days. So I actually only did it for a few days before I was like, this is completely pointless. The other one, TaskRabbit, actually was pretty lucrative. And what I was mainly doing was there's a lot of startup companies in Menlo Park, and they would just need office furniture assembled, and they would pay $55 an hour just to have somebody put together IKEA desks and stuff. And you'd do that for 5 hours. There was a fashion magazine that just needed cardboard boxes broken down. They were paying $40 an hour to break down cardboard boxes. It was ridiculously easy money, and the environments were cool because, you know, you're in a trendy workspace, so they have plenty of snacks that they're giving you and things like that. And also with TaskRabbit as well, I did a lot of handyman type work, so going to people's houses in like Atherton who couldn't install their curtain rods. And I'm not necessarily a particularly handy guy, but I would kind of fumble my way through and make sure I didn't put too many holes in their expensive gilded walls and things like that. But it was a good experience there just because it was some of the money was so easy. Some of these companies were literally just throwing money away for things that people on their staff could do easily. But I see how, you know, if they have enough revenue, they don't necessarily want to take the time to do some of those things. So I started doing the gigs for side money. And then for a short period, I left my job and TaskRabbit was my primary source of income for like a month before I transitioned into something else. But it just wasn't exactly what I wanted to continue doing, of course. You know, you want something more permanent. But it was a great way to get some money in the short term for some very easy tasks.
Okay, that was Arthur's experience around his version of the gig economy. Next up, we have Nora. She has a different, frankly, more positive take on things. Plus, there's a celeb sighting, hashtag Aziz Ansari.
My name is Nora, and I am a production manager at my company.
Cool. Well, we're collecting, like, gig economy stories, right?
Right.
And we heard through the grapevine, meaning, you know, Liana, that you have a kind of a unique story. So I just want you to do what you told me out there, basically, the pre-interview prep, because it was kind of intriguing because we've not had anybody that with that kind of a story.
So when I started with a ride-sharing company, I started about 2 years ago, and I actually don't do it through my own car. I'm not myself an independent operator in the ride sharing company. I actually work for a company, and the company is the one who operates within the ride sharing company as a partner.
Okay.
I never had to worry about like filing my own taxes or maintaining my own car or anything like that. I was given hours to show up and drive, and I was given an hourly wage plus bonuses if I made more than that. But that's not through the ride sharing company, right? That's through my company that I work for.
Okay. I have some business side questions on that one. But tell me, what's a work day look like for you? I mean, this is not your only gig, right?
So the company is the only company that I work for. I started as a driver there, and then in that company, I became an instructor of a quality improvement course, and now I maintain materials for that course and develop new materials for that course and new like videos and things like that for that course.
Like I said earlier, you literally wrote the book on how to be a better Uber driver.
Something along those lines. Yeah, me and my company, we work really hard. We really believe in the principles that we use, and we really think that a lot of the people who have trouble with their quality on the road in terms of interacting with customers usually don't have a customer service background. Like, that's usually the issue. So we talk a lot about how to really orient yourself from a customer service perspective.
Right. So it's mismanners for Uber drivers.
Kind of.
What makes you different than a taxi company?
I mean, now I think taxi companies do have apps and stuff like that. But especially when I was starting, like, it really made a huge difference that you could see who was coming to pick you up and you could see who you were picking up. So, like, I used to have to call for taxis at like 4 a.m. for one of my like previous jobs, and they would almost never show up. So I ended up buying my own car. But it's like, if I had known about the ride sharing options where you do, the whole point is that you can see who's picking you up or you can see who you're picking up, like, that made such a huge difference for me and feeling confident from a driving perspective. And then I started using it as a rider as well, too.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned that you started as a driver before graduating up, if you will. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's basically how it worked. It's sort of, latitudinal, but.
How was that overall experience for you, and what pushed you into thinking this is a good way to go to put a little cash in my pocket?
Well, honestly, it's that my buddy was having fun doing it. My buddy Will and I both worked in another company together, and we'd had a bad experience at that one. But he had started working at this other company, and he said, "Hey, Nora, you should check out this place because I'm really having fun." Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things, too, is that because neither of us had to worry about our own cars or like actually the bottom line, because we both have bosses, like, we could just go out and drive around and have fun meeting people mm-hmm. and taking them where they need to go. Like, that part of the job is really fun, I think. Mm-hmm. I definitely know that people can get into bad situations. I've been lucky enough not to really have any of those. And some of that is luck and some of that is skill. Like, I think, so you don't always know the kind of person who's going to get in your car.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, Liana, what did I miss?
We have the quality improvement courses, and I used to travel for those to instruct them.
Oh, so like a hotel ballroom, and you give a PowerPoint?
Not a hotel ballroom, just like a classroom size.
Right, okay. So a boardroom or a conference room.
Yeah, a boardroom. And we, because of the nature of ride-sharing companies where you're not, typically drivers are not employed, right? I'm employed by my company, but it's not like I'm employed by a ride-sharing company, me to them. I'm employed by my company, who is a partner with a ride-sharing company.
Got it.
But most people are doing it on their own.
Right.
Right?
So 1099s.
Yeah. So my company, we don't call our courses training or anything like that. And a lot of the stuff we do, we developed it on our own. So technically, some of the stuff, like, we think that the way that we instruct it and the manner we give it is really powerful and is worthwhile, and that's why we keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But, people could, like, there are people who never need to come to our course or wouldn't need it because they have the experience being customer service or whatever. So we don't call them, like, classes. We don't call it training. It really is about just improvement. It's a session and it's a course to, like, help you improve. And we give them in live courses in L.A. and in Orange County and in San Diego and Phoenix and Chicago, and we used to do them on the East Coast as well.
Okay.
And I used to travel for the Las Vegas, Phoenix, L.A., San Diego loop.
That's not a bad loop.
It's not. It's pretty nice, and especially since I have some friends in L.A., so I would sometimes visit, like, but I was going every other week for, like, 5 or 6 days, so for, like, months.
Oh, wow.
So I used to do that, and the cool thing was getting to meet all these different, because every city kind of has their own environment in terms of how people, like, the expectations of the riders. So, like, in LA, they have so many more levels of different options you can choose from in terms of, like, the kinds of cars you can order. Whereas here, we don't care. Like, nobody cares about showing up in a fancy car. Everybody you know, everybody's happy to show up in a Prius. So fancy car services don't really work in terms of a ride-sharing ordering company.
Right.
So that was really interesting.
It is
cool. It was quite tiring, though. And I think anybody who travels for work can tell you that it kind of grates after a while, unless you're really good at it.
What else did I miss? Wait, do you know Aziz Ansari?
I picked him up in a car ride once. His buddy ordered the trip, and I went and I picked them up, and I took them to, like, go to a coffee place, and then I took them to dinner, and then I dropped them off.
Right on.
It was like, you know, I had the hardest time being chill. I think I texted Liana like 100,000 times. I was like, I have Aziz Ansari. Not when I was driving. I want to specify.
Yes.
When I was driving, I was very careful.
But page I did one of the book, actually.
Yeah.
Don't text and drive.
They did ask me to wait while they went and got a cup of coffee. So that was like 20 minutes when I was parked around the corner. And I was just like telling everybody I knew, guess who's in my car?
Right. Well, a great part of Aziz's new concert, of course, is not being able to get dates. Was he with a woman or a man, or were they on a date, or were they on a
business?
Oh,
it was one of his buddies. It was one of his friends.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
I think he's, you know, he's probably one of those dudes who has local friends, everybody, because he's a cool dude.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh. We'll send him this. Maybe he'll come back and hang out with us.
Crossing fingers. Yeah.
Right on. Me too. Okay. Thanks, Nora.
Thank you.
That was Nora testifying about her experience in the gig economy. This week, we are gigging it out for all four segments. If you want more of our gig coverage, please go to kgoradio.com/techonomics. There's a story there that matches this week's show. It has all the links to satisfy your podcast and sourcing needs. Coming up after this break, we get macro gig, as in the economics of gigging, and what's up with the health insurance risks involved. Also, Google has a new salary equalizing tool if you're looking for more permanent work. All that's next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please come on back.